What's poppin', my Freeform Renegades? You are tuned into the Freeform Network. Thanks for joining us for another fun episode of Freeform Radio. I'm your host, Noel, with my co-host, Daniel.
Yes, sir, man. Back in the cut here. Just got home a few minutes ago. A little chilly outside, but nice and toasty inside.
Very nice, man. And we got Andy here.
It's all good, Andy. What's going on, guys? We're back here. The gang's all back together, and talk your ears off, man.
Yes, sir. Well, we're just going to jump right into it and catch up with everybody's week. And let's start off with Daniel. It looks like you went to Outback Steakhouse, I believe, and they didn't have any bread for you, man. What kind of restaurant is this?
I know, man. Tell me about it. We haven't gone out and eat in a while, and Junior just recently started adventuring into eating more foods, and one of them is a steak. Now, I think it was sometime last year he started eating arracheras, which is skirt steak, but he saw that me and Alana were going to eat like a ribeye steak for Valentine's, and he's just like, yeah, I want to try one too. So Alana cooked him one, he dug it, so we're like, next weekend we'll go out, do like the official Valentine's, because we didn't go out for Valentine's, and we'll go to like a steak place, like an Outback. So everybody was all excited. June is excited to get a steak. We get there, and the lady's just like, yeah, just to let you guys know. And she did tell us right up front, but she's just like, just to let you guys know, we have no bread. We have no Outback bread. So just to let you know. Now, I could barely hear her as it is. Like, unless I'm directing my attention to you, there's a lot of background chatter that I don't really listen to or can't hear very well. So I didn't hear what the hell she said. Alana looked over to me, and I just nodded like, yeah, okay. And then so she took our water drinks, and then after she left, I go to Alana, what did she say? Oh, that they don't have no bread. And I'm like, oh, hell no, man. What the hell's going on, man? That's like one of the best parts of Outback is their bread. Am I wrong, or is that the best, one of the best parts of Outback?
That's a part of the experience, you know, when they give you that bread. But yeah, it's weird that they don't have, usually I know sometimes in the past they don't bring it to you unless you ask, but if they're telling you up front, that's kind of strange. And then as I was gonna say, like, I thought you're gonna say like, hell no, you got up and left. But it is a part of the experience. I like the bread
for sure. Have you been to Outback recently, Noel?
You know, I can't really recall, man, but, you know, I know like Olive Garden, I've been there a few times and they have like the endless bread. So if somebody told me they didn't have bread, I get how you would feel, you know?
Right. Yeah. Their bread is like this, wheaty kind of whole grain bread, but it tastes very good. It's usually nice and toasted butter on the outside. Yeah. With their butter, and nice and soft on the inside. So it's a part of it. Usually Mr. Cheap, I'll order like two or three because I'll fill up more on the bread than the entree, just so that I could take some entree home for me so I could heat it up later on the day. And with us not having bread, it kind of messed with my whole ratio. I actually finished my whole entree just because I didn't have the bread to even fill up on. So
what the fuck?
Yeah, it kind of sucked with my leftovers, you know, day after I could heat something up, But yeah, it was pretty good. I did mention it to Alana once I understood what the hell she said. I'm like, do you want to stay? And Alana asked Junior, and Junior was really psyched for the steak. And he's just like, I don't eat bread. If they don't have any, that's fine. So I'm like, I guess we'll stay. But yeah, steaks were okay. It usually doesn't happen to me, but my steak was a little more well done than I asked for. Usually I'll ask for like a medium well, and it'll come a little on the raw side, which I don't mind. I like it with a little bit of pink in there. And if it does come a little more rare than I like, I'll just eat like the outer edge, because like I mentioned, usually I take it for leftovers anyways. So I'll eat the outer edge while I'm there. I'll eat my potato, and then I'll take the rest leftovers, and then the next day I'll cook it for another 5 minutes and get it more to the medium well, like I like it. But yeah, this time it was more well cooked than I usually like it. So there was like almost no pink at all. and it was almost like borderline dry. But
so when they told you there was no bread, then you're like, let's get appetizers or anything. You didn't think of that, or like, you're like, you can give us a discount on an appetizer or anything.
I did think, I'm like, are they going to offer anything as like a counter? Like, all right, we're offering 50 off apps, or we're offering you a free drink or something.
Or a blooming onion, or like,
yeah,
petals or something. They have some goofy shit like that. Yeah.
I was waiting for something, and the manager was walking around chit-chatting here and there. And I told Alana, I'm like, I'm not going to be one of those people to ask for something, but if the manager comes and asks me, I'm going to bring it up. And she's just like, yeah, bring it up. You never know. Maybe we'll get a free blooming onion or something.
Right.
But no, he never came. And actually, I did get an after the meal survey through my email. And I also put on there the no bread was very disappointing, but nobody's reached out to me yet. So
you're like, you ain't shit without bread.
Right. So I'm not sure if Outback's going to compensate, but yeah, that's how that meal went.
So real quick, when you order the steak, you get the salad and then the side. Mm-hmm. What do you do then? Do you get a salad, or you just like, do you double up on something else?
It depends. Like, with the idea of bringing leftovers home, I usually get two potatoes, because then I'll eat one potato there, and then half the steak, and then I'll take the other half of the steak home with the other potato. And so on my leftover meal, I'll eat half of my steak and the rest of my potato that I didn't eat. But with me not knowing that we didn't have breads, I just got a salad and I just ate the whole thing while I was sitting there. But yeah, their salad's pretty good, actually. Their Caesar salad, it's got like this zangy pepper on it.
Spicy.
It's really good. So yeah, Outback was good. Steak was a little more overcooked than I like, but it was still good. Jumping onto something else, Andy, I think you knew these for sure. I don't know about you, Noel, but I watched the Netflix documentary called Mucho, Mucho Amor. I guess a pop quiz, Noel. Do you know what that phrase comes from, or what that is?
No, I'm trying to think. No. I can't.
You know what it is, I'm sure, Andy, right?
I do not, man. Refresh my memory.
Really? Okay. Yeah. This was the catchphrase for Walter Mercado when he was the horoscope guy on the Telemundo and all the Latinos TV broadcasts. It's a documentary that Netflix did on him, and they recorded it before his passing. He did pass away recently, but a lot of the footage is before, the interview is before he passed away. So it was very timely. They actually got they captured like the 50th anniversary, his induction into some kind of Miami Hall of Fame or something. I forgot what it was. But yeah, really cool documentary, kind of showing the upbringing of him and how he really popularized a daily horoscope televised broadcast, which wasn't really something back in the day. And he really brought upon a bunch of other horoscope stuff, like Cleo, that Jamaican lady, and a few others, like big notable ones, where they came on the back end of Walter Mercado. But really cool, interesting. I was never a Walter Mercado fan. I was never really into horoscopes or anything like that. But it was just very interesting because he was so prominent in the Latino culture that everybody knew of it. I know my parents would watch it. I don't know if they really believed in it so much, or if it was just like in passing, we'll watch it. But yeah, it was always on the TV whenever he would be broadcasting.
Yeah, my mom watched them a lot. And then I really, but yeah, I saw that documentary. I saw it a while back because it's an older documentary. But yeah, like I just, the thing that I remember from that, all the vitamins he was taking, right?
Right.
He was in Puerto Rico or something, and then his house was just like super cluttered. And then like all the early footage. But yeah, in the Latino community, he was like popular. I don't think America knows how popular this guy was in the Latino community.
Yeah, for sure. Does the name ring a bell, Noel? Walter Mercado?
You know, all of a sudden it does. Once you said that name, it clicked. I remember mom watching it, like just whatever program they were on. I would come home from school and then hear whatever the daily horoscope was.
Like the outfits and stuff you wore, man, right?
yeah, that was, I try not to pay too much attention to that. That was really bizarre, but
yes,
I felt like it added the mystique to it. Like this guy wanted to be like supernatural or something.
Yeah. And his hair was weird, like puffy and like, yeah. Now that I remember, yeah, he had like almost like a gown or like this wizard thing, right?
Yeah,
right.
There you
go. Yeah, it kind of gave me vibes of like Elvis or maybe even like what was that other flamboyant actor singer?
Liberace.
Yeah, the guy that was in the first WrestleMania, mm-hmm. like that kind of feel to it. And it, you know, when I was watching, what I would watch him as a kid at my parents, when my mom and dad would have him running. I always got like that feeling like there's something about his sexuality, and the documentary kind of goes into it a little bit, but never really gives it an answer as far as was he a homosexual or what was his deal. But he always had like that flamboyant, like over the top persona. But yeah, he was pretty innocent. I know he was really cherished by a lot of people. I don't think there was ever anything bad to say or broadcast about him. So just an overall seemed like a nice guy. But yeah, like you mentioned, Andy, he retired in Puerto Rico because I think he is Puerto Rican, if I recall correctly. But yeah.
The other thing I remember, they like some guy swindled like all his money and his name and all this, right? Something like that in the documentary.
Yeah, it was kind of like Elvis where his handler or the guy that helped him get famous told him, here, sign here. I'll take care of your money. And then at the end of it, the guy owned all his name, his licensing rights, and Walter Mercado couldn't do anything without this guy approving it. So it wasn't until quite a few years later that he decided to fight for his name back so he could own the rights for his family. And yeah, he ended up winning, or they ended up settling. I forget what the outcome was, but pretty cool to see him coming up. He was in telenovelas and just a bunch of regular stuff in the Latino television. And then, yeah, he just happened to stumble across this thing, and it really took off and became his persona. But pretty cool documentary. Another documentary that I watched in Netflix actually was Don't Pick Up Your Phone. I don't know if you guys have heard of this one, or does it even ring a bell?
No, that one doesn't ring a bell at all. What's that about?
That one is actually about, it's like a 3-episode documentary about a guy that would call like fast food restaurants and convince the people that that he was a police officer or some kind of agency and get the people to strip search one of the coworkers there. It was a really weird documentary. When I saw the first episode, Alana always touts it. She's like, you always find the weirdest stuff to watch. And this was one of those that I legit like, yeah, I don't know how I stumbled across this documentary. But yeah, the whole gist is that the guy would call the restaurant and be like, all right, are you the manager of the McDonald's there at this location? And be like, yeah, I'm the manager. Well, we just got a report of somebody purse being stolen at your location, and the person that stole it is blonde, a female, teenage, blah blah blah, or whatever. The guy would give a description of one of the coworkers. They would call the coworker in there and be like, all right, either the coworker needs to come down to the prison, she'll be booked, we'll have to do a search here, or if she's willing, you can do the search there and you don't have to leave the restaurant. So you know, most people don't want to get in trouble and they don't want to go to the police office station. So they would let them strip search them there, the managers or whatever. And in a lot of cases, these restaurants would have cameras. So they would show some footage, you know, obviously blurred out, but where these people would let managers strip search them. And I don't know how this guy got his jollies off of that. Maybe the power trip of getting other people to do what he wanted. But yeah, It didn't only happen there. It happened on 100 other occasions. I forget what the total number was, but it was like over 100 phone calls that he would do where he would get KFC, McDonald's, Wendy's. He would call all these restaurants and get all these people to do strip searches to their employees. And it was just wild, man. I couldn't believe it.
When did this happen?
If I recall correctly, it's not too long ago. I would say maybe like 5-10 years ago.
Oh, really? It sounds like an 80s thing to me.
Yeah, maybe it goes far back as that, but it is definitely recent, or recenter. It happened a lot more in smaller communities, and the interview a lot of police officers that were involved in trying to apprehend the guy, and they even spoke to a couple psychologists, and they're like, he would target smaller communities where they're more like Bible thumping Christians and they respect authority. So if the police officer says do this, then you do it, you know, because you're taught to respect authority. Military people and whatnot, you know, they would get them, you know, to, yeah. So it was like almost like, you know, playing mind tricks with these people. And yeah, I mean, the documentary kind of draws that out a little bit.
They're simpletons. They'll listen.
Kind of like, you know, smaller communities. They're not big cities. The couple towards the end, I don't know if he started going too crazy, because it's not only strip search, but then he started even getting the managers to like sexually abuse the people. And like, yeah, and go above, like, and not simple stuff either, man. Like some straight on, like, you know, pornographic stuff, like some crazy stuff. And yeah, they speak to the people that got abused. And yeah, they're like, yeah, you know, I just thought it was the cop. And this was part of the strip search, you know, for me to do this and for me to do that. It's like, all right, we're going to need him to stick this in your mouth so we can make sure there's nothing in, you know, and it's just like, what? But dude, it happened. And like I mentioned, like 100 times, more than 100. Granted, they finally caught the guy the last episode or two. It's about the hunt to find him and get the clues to find them and whatnot. But really weird, out there documentary, something that you usually don't hear about. And I've never really heard about after this. And even they even start talking about the corporate side of it, as far as was McDonald's, KFC, were they negligible? Because since there was 100 of these occurrences, why didn't they start warning their coworkers and stuff? So it really goes into some different aspects of it. But yeah, pretty cool watch. It's called Don't Pick Up the Phone. I watched it on Netflix, but I'm not sure if it's theirs or if it's just a generic documentary that you can find anywhere. But yeah, man, I think that's enough about me. Let's jump over to Andy. Andy, house hunting update. I know we spoke about it a little bit before we started, but why don't you give us an update on where you're at?
I've talked about it on past episodes. I've been house hunting basically since last early summer, and we made offers on multiple houses. We had one get accepted in last fall. After the inspection, everything kind of fell through. We wanted them to do stuff. It was like major repairs. They didn't want to do it, so we mutually backed out. And we've been house hunting ever since, still here and there. Got kind of frustrating towards the end of last year. But we kept at it. I always tell my wife, I was telling the whole time, I'm like, because pricing right now is kind of weird. It's high. Where the rest of the country, it's like kind of low. For some reason in Northern Illinois, it's Chicagoland. It's just, it's like hot markets like Schaumburg, Elk Grove Village.
This is where you want to go. It's hot.
Like pricing, yeah, like with good schools and stuff. It's just like you like a house, boom, and people were paying over a list. So we really like this area over here where I kind of live now. It's about 15-20 minutes south of here. It's nice square footage. We went and looked at it yesterday. I think we were like the first people to see it, to be honest with you, because they listed it like on Wednesday or Thursday. I don't think too many people go see homes during the week. I mean, I could be wrong. And then we saw it yesterday. I talked to my wife. We talked to the realtor, the number they were asking, and like You think they could do this, which is about, it was $25,000 less than the, what they were asking. And she wrote up the offer. We submitted it, and they actually countered. So we kind of knew what they were looking for. The first counter was like it was $5,000 less than what they asked for. And then we told them like I'm willing to do this price. And then I told the realtor, like, well, what do they want? Like, just fuck all this $5,000. Just tell them what's your final price. And then they came back at a price, and then they're like, but they want to sell it as is, because the people who own it, they don't live in state. The people that used to, that lived there passed away. It was their parents. And then I'm like, well, okay, if we do it this price and we get a home warranty that they pay for, sure. And then, yeah, that's, we came upon that. And it's really nice. It's open. It's just like this whole shit with the whole past year, just fucking looking at housing. And we saw a lot of crap. We saw really nice houses that were like you already know, like you're overpaying, like for some of these places, but people put in more money than they were offering, which I get. Like, me and my wife, we've been married a long time and we have good jobs and we're able to save money. But people, kids, you know, you read like millennials and Gen Z, like trying to buy houses and they're bitching, but they want to live like in the city where like big cities where it's a lot more expensive. Like, they're never going to be able to afford with the salaries, and they got student debt and all this crap. So yeah, it's hard, man, but we got what we wanted, and we're looking forward to it. We're hoping to be there maybe at the end of April or early May.
Cool, man. So wow. So the moving or the closing will take a few months to happen, because you said, yeah, May.
Yeah, I mean, we still got to do the inspection. We got to do the radon test, and then we got to talk to the lawyer. So let's say that all takes all of March, right? Yeah, so next month is March, April, yeah, maybe mid-April, maybe early May, something like that.
Yeah, I know. For
plus
us,
there's there's a lot of shit in that house too, so I don't know. And these people live out of state. I don't know what the fuck they're gonna do.
Yeah, I know. When we had our closing, it moved fairly quick. I mean, within a month, yeah, after the inspection. So after the inspection, within a month, we were in the house already.
And then we found renters for the house here. So it's going to work out. We just got to, like everything, when you move somewhere, you got to find your liquidity and your budget to see how the flow is going to work. It should take us like maybe a couple months, but then I can figure out what we can do money wise and your budget, I guess. But yeah, man, it's been a long time coming. I like it. The wife likes it a lot. It's spacious compared to what we got now. And the other house, it has 4 bedrooms up on top, the 2.5 baths. And then it got a finished basement, so the basement's usable. And it wasn't too bad of, you know, it was really done. It's just, we'll see how it is once we get in there, and like, we're going to change some things up, but everything is usable. I mean, I see some houses where some stuff wasn't usable and they wanted like a shitload of money. Like, I saw a ton of those houses. And I'm like, that's why it's so cheap. Or they want something similar, like what the going rate is in that area, but like, nothing is, it's old. Like, they haven't done shit to it, and then they barely maintained it. We saw a house in Roselle, immaculate house, beautiful. We get there, and it has, you walk in, and then you're like, oh, this is just a little outdated, right? And like, now, like, why is it they're offering this type of credit? And you go in, once you pass the midway point, the house went downward, like in a downward slope. And the realtor didn't say none of the paperwork. She called them like, yeah, it has a foundation crack. That's why they're giving you a credit, so you can fix it. And I'm just like, fuck that. Like, and someone bought it in the initial viewing. Someone bought a house. Like I'm like, someone bought this. The realtor's like, dude, it's going to cost like 60 to 80 grand to fix all this shit. And then the deal fell through. Then someone else made another offer, and it's on contingent again. So I don't know what they're going to do with that house. But that was like, they wanted like $380,000 for that house.
Dang, that's pretty freaking high, dude, for a house with foundation issues.
Yeah, it's cracked in the half. It's like, it literally, you walked and then like the house, like you felt like you're going downward. Like, holy shit, like you could roll something down, like a can or something. And then I'm like, what are they going to, how they fix this? Like, are they going to put the shit dig underneath and like lift it? But then I'm like, how do you fix the rest of the house? Like, shit's stressed or cracked, you know?
That's true, man. Yeah, that's not worth the hassle.
Yeah, she's like, they would have to tear it down to make it right. So I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's somebody that knows what the hell they're doing, because it's pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, going back to the house, this is the, like, we've made offers on like 5 different homes, and this one they actually like said what they wanted. The other one where we made an offer, they were kind of, they're like, this is our price, we're not budging. Like, they told you that from up front, and we kind of tried to finagle with them, but they weren't doing it. Like, this is our number. But I like that house a lot. And then stuff happened during the inspection that came up, and I'm like, they didn't want to fix that. And then the other houses, we made offers, like, we got multiple offers. To put your best offer in by like this day, just like that. And I'm like, what? Like, we don't even know what the fuck we're up against.
Right. And, I remember when we're looking at a few houses, the realtor would be up front. They're like, look, they got like 3 bids. If you're not gonna ask for price or more, don't even waste your time. So yeah, I know it was hot even when we were looking for a house back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what? Like, we don't even know. Like, we're just, like, we're already, I always tell her, we're overpaying right now. She's like, but it's the area. Like, people are like you looking for schools and this other shit. And I'm like, oh, it's fucking insane. And then back then, the last summer, the interest rate was like at 8%.
Whoa. Yeah. That's really high.
And then the bank's like, you guys got good credit. Maybe I could get it for you like 7.5. But I was just like, fuck. So right now with this house, I was crunching the numbers. The bank's guaranteed rate, they said they, with our credit, we could get it at 6.4. And I was just like, I was crunching numbers like on the payment. I'm like, it's like, fuck. But yeah, but I'm like, to be honest with you, I don't think we're ever going to see that rate back at like 3 or 4%. We might see it at 5. I don't think it's ever going to get below 5, not for a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it might settle somewhere, maybe 4 or 5's the lowest. But yeah, 3 was kind of unheard of.
Yeah, like right now, my rate, I got it, the house forever. Now it's like at 3.25, just under a quarter, something like that. And it's a 15-year. So we'll see. Real quick, the other thing... What took SneakerCon by storm was the Trump shoes. I don't know if you guys had to see them. People are laughing and, you know, and all this goofy shit. You guys check that out?
No, what they look like?
They're gold with their high tops. They're gold. And then the top, it has the American flag on the high top. Then on the sides, it has T, like T for Trump. And then the it's just fucking hilarious, dude. And then they sold out, and there were like $400 a pair.
That's not that bad, 100.
And Trump was $400 a pair.
Oh snap!
And then he was signing a couple of them, and there was an auction. I think the guy paid $9,000 or something for it at the auction, and then. There's also apparently they were selling the cologne called Victory 47. and it's $99 a bottle. You want to smell like Trump, guys?
Nah, I'm good, man.
Yeah. So there was only 1,000 pairs of gold shoes were available, and then which described the sneakers as super limited, and at least 10 of the gold sneakers were randomly autographed by Trump.
Oh, so then, so he was a part of this. It wasn't like a third party company like making shoes.
No, here, this is what it. And then at the, I was reading this article that was like that does just talking about them, and then they go, Trump sneakers are not designed, manufactured, distributed, or sold by Donald J. Trump, the Trump Organization, or any respective affiliates. They're under license, so he just let them, like, yeah, how much are you going to give me so you can make them, like, to sell them? That's what that was about.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't think I would want them, man. I get enough text messages from the Republican Party telling me about how they need money and this and the other. I think they got plenty of money. They don't need to message me.
Trump got a lot of money. I don't know about the Republican Party. Oh, okay. Show up to Junior, bro. See if he's like he's going at a young audience. If he would wear these, so yeah, it's crazy. Like he's just making money off his name, which is cool, I guess. I don't personally don't care. I wouldn't wear them. I know that, but yeah, it's one of the things they knock Trump for, you know, because he's always making money, and that's the big issue. But the thing, they're kind of gaudy for me. It's like bright gold, and then with the American flag up on top, and then the T on the side, which is fucking hilarious. So, I don't know, man. Like, I don't even think when Lorenzo, the Ball family was making their fucking shoes, and Shaq. I know Shaq shoes, like the ones you see at Walmart. He's like, he sells like a ton of those shoes, and they're made cheap. So...
It's I think it's like $1 million, you know, company from selling shoes to Walmart.
Yeah, like, dude, he said when he left Reebok or whatever, he's like, I'm going to make my own shoes. And, like, people were making fun of him. And then now he's like, he's up there with, like, Nike or something on the amount of shoes and how much money he makes on those Shaq shoes. At like Walmart's, and I think mostly Walmart, to be honest with you, but yeah, I don't see him nowhere else. But he says he makes a ton of money off of that, and he owns it. He's a big shareholder, or he owns a big chunk of that company.
Right. Yeah. I don't think they look too bad, but yeah, I thought I saw him at Walmart the last time I was walking around.
You should buy him then and give a review on him, man.
Nah, I'm
subsidize you, man. I think they're like $15.
I'm a Skechers, New Balance kind of guy.
Were you the Skechers by Romo? Did you see that like Super Bowl commercial?
No, Tony Romo?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I saw that.
He was hawking Skechers, and they were kind of hideous. I think the New Balance were they're nicer. The old man shoes, you know. But that's enough about me. Let us know what you guys think. Would you wear the Trump shoes, or would you wear his Victory 47 cologne at $100 a bottle? Let us know what you guys think at ffnquestions@gmail.com. But let's roll over to Noel, man. It looks like he's been doing some gaming. You beat Resident Evil Revelations 1 and 2. How did that go, and like what console is that, PC?
So yeah, the game originally released on Nintendo 3DS, if you believe that, back in 2012, it looks like. I didn't get it for the 3DS, though. I got it for PC. I got it maybe like closer to 2018 is when I got it. They released like a HD version eventually, and it released on PS3, Wii U, Xbox 360, PS4, all that stuff. But the PC is where I like mainly bought all my Resident Evil games, and that's where I have every Resident Evil game that, you know, I have on my list. So anyway, just really quick on this one, it's a decent game, nothing crazy. I would probably give it like 6 out of 10. kind of mediocre, but what was cool about it is the story that it tells. And it just, if you like the Resident Evil storyline, or just the, you know, genre itself, then you're going to probably like the game and the story that unfolds. And you play as Jill Valentine, and you get Chris Redfield is in it as well. It's a single player game, but it's, I would say it's pretty entertaining. It's, you do exploration on a decommissioned like battleship or something like that. It's like this huge military vessel, and there's a lot of puzzles to solve and zombies to fight and different creatures and stuff. So, you know, it's typical Resident Evil fashion. And they made a second one. That one came out a few years after, I think 2015, it says here in the timeline. And that one was actually a little bit more entertaining for me. It was just a little less on the action, more on the horror. And whereas the first one was much more horror, much more action related, is just a lot of fight scenes, but less on the actual zombie like horror part of it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the overall, the two, you know, were worth playing. They're shorter games, I would say. Not very long at all. It's maybe about 10 to 12 hours if you really go above and beyond, explore every single crevice of the place. But, you know, I like to explore and stuff. So I think I put in like 10 hours in the game or something like that, close to.
For both?
Well, no, for each one. So 20, each I guess, one. Total. Yeah.
Okay.
I think a little bit longer in Revelations 2 than 1. Actually, for one, I was kind of just hoping it was going to end already at the end. I got the main part of the story, and I was just trying to escape or whatever. And it's an okay game. I would say these are just side stories. They still do take place, I guess, in the universe. I think they are canon. But it's one of those things that I was just trying to get it done because I bought it so many years ago. I'm like, let's just knock it off the list. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm trying to like knock things off the list that I put on the backlog for years ago, you know, that I was going to do. So, yeah, I ended up beating those two. If you like Resident Evil, you know, give it a shot. They're really cheap games. Although Resident Evil Revelations 2, they did kind of like a bait and switch that I didn't realize till I started playing it. Back when I first bought this, it's released in episodes. And when they put it on sale, it was like $2 or whatever the hell it was. And I'm like, damn, this is a steal. But I didn't pay attention to the fine print. This is episodic, and it's each episode. They don't sell it as a bundle. And so when I bought it, I only had episode one. I had to buy 2, 3, and 4. Although, thankfully, they were cheap. You know, it was like $5 or something like that. And after I beat episode one, I'm like, yeah, you know, let me just finish this up. Might as well get it for $5. And it's pretty cool. It deals with the... Claire Redfield. It's got Barry from the first one, and his daughter is also in it, and she's the one that plays alongside Claire Redfield. It's kind of like almost like Resident Evil Zero, where you have like a partner by your side at all times, and you could switch through, and you kind of use each other to solve puzzles and stuff. And it does have some cool puzzles in it, and you're playing like on an island, and it's kind of cool, man. Like I actually like 2 better than 1. And I didn't like want to rush through it. It was more like I was entertained by the story and what was unfolding. And it had some creepy vibes, and just some cool characters. So I do recommend number 2 over number 1. And I mean, technically you don't even need to play number 1 to understand what number 2 is about. They're kind of their own stories, their own isolated stuff. It might tie into each other, like just very minimally. You wouldn't miss anything though. So
I've never played these two. They're always on sale, but yeah, since they were 3DS games, I didn't know if I would really dig it. So I've never played either one.
Yeah, that would just be for the first one. The second one released on PS3 and above.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so the first one though, you could tell like it was. Although it was remastered in HD, you could tell like this had some limitations to it, whereas Resident Evil 2 or Revelations 2 was a little bit more traditional of a Resident Evil game with the abilities and all that. And you do have some cool like they added some RPG elements in the sense that you can upgrade your weaponry. It's a little bit more different than the traditional Resident Evil games that I'm used to. And so you can add these like these things to your weapons that adjust the fire rate, the capacity, the you know, damage, and they you put them on like stats or like charms. It's kind of hard to explain, but when you play it, it is pretty simple to like follow along. It's not complicated, but it's interesting how they're implementing just newer aspects to the gameplay that it's evolved over the original Resident Evil series.
Wow, man. Now that you mentioned Zero, I didn't bring it up, but I tried to play it. I hadn't played it since it first came out. It doesn't hold up that great, man. I got off the train and I was just like, I can't play anymore. I think I'm done.
Really? Well, what'd you play it on?
On PlayStation 5. I had bought it a while ago when I bought the first one. And I kind of remember it fondly on GameCube when I played it last. And I'm like, all right, I'll play it again. And it was all right. But the two-player mechanic, you know, going back and forth, the inventory system was really limited. You always had to drop like items to pick up stuff. You didn't have your dresser magical drawer where you can put it in there, and then the next drawer you go into, it's in there as well. It didn't have that mechanic, so it just became managing inventory really difficult. So it got me pissed off, and I'm like, I'm done.
You know, I completely relate to that, man. I actually played that game, I think, 3 or 4 different playthroughs throughout the time that it's existed. And I completely agree with that. It is just cumbersome. It doesn't have all the space that you used to have. And you constantly have to remember, where did I leave that gun? Where did I leave this thing? So in the last playthrough that I played on it, I played it in 4K on the PC. Like I said, I have most of my Resident Evil games on there. And I enjoyed it, man. I enjoyed it better than all the other playthroughs. It was my favorite playthrough that I've had of it. And I actually really love Resident Evil Zeros. That's why I was surprised to hear you didn't like it. But aside from that, like, if you strategize and you leave it all in the main room and you all your items, you consistently go back to that room like it's the main hall, then you won't have that issue you're having.
Right. I did read, because before I quit on it, I did read. I'm like, man, do you get to unlock something to give you more slots? And when I went and Googled around, they're like, no. And a few people did suggest that. They're like, leave the stuff in a save room, because you're going to go back there a few times during the train level and then during the underground level or whatever. So then you just go back there and just pick up all the junk that's in the floor. But by that point, I was just too frustrated. I was just like, I can't play like this. I'm so used to playing games where you just pick everything up off the floor and then you go sell it, you go break it down and make it into something. To have to think about the shit that you want to pick up, it just made it more frustrating. And I don't know, man, I loved it when I first played it on GameCube, so it was real disappointing that I didn't get a chance to finish it.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And really, the mechanic is just useless. Like, there's no reason that you can't have the same storage chest you had in the other games. I don't know if they were going for realism, like, oh, you really can't carry all this shit, or what they were thinking when they did that. But, you know, yeah, it is what it is. I moved past it once I had that strategy to leave in the same room. It was much more enjoyable. If you give it a try and do that, you might enjoy it a little more.
Yeah.
But moving on to another game I was playing, I ended up picking up Final Fantasy 16 on PS5. And I've been playing that. I've probably got, like, you know, over 15 hours in the game. It's like a 30 to 60 hour game, depending on like what you do. It's an RPG, although I use that term loosely. If anybody's played the Final Fantasy series, this is a little different than most of the traditional Final Fantasy games. I would say this is more of an action hack and slash kind of game. And have you heard about this one, Daniel?
Yeah, actually, it was one that I'm kind of interested in. But the only thing that scares me off is all that stat-based stuff. It's a little bit of a turnoff. I would love if it was like simplified for dummies, where you could just press a button and it like auto upgrades all your stuff, and you could just play the game, loot, even like games like Diablo and stuff like that. That's what kind of turns me off, all that loot pickup stuff. It's just too much. I know I was mentioning it for Resident Evil, but the few games that I've played are more under control, where it's like light stuff like Skyrim and Fallout, stuff like that. These are like mostly they're really extreme. It's like too much stat-based upgrades and stuff.
Well, man, I think this is made for you then, because like I said, I use RPG loosely because it really doesn't have the elements like what you're saying, where it's really deep in the customization of attributes and all that. Okay. The game does most of the work for you, and it's very linear. One of the most linear games I've ever played. It doesn't, while it is a big world, it doesn't really feel that way because you can't really go everywhere. There are like, it is a big game, but it's limited in certain ways that I was like kind of thrown off by. So like in Skyrim or in some other like RPG games, you know, you have more exploration, more open world. You can jump off cliffs and stuff like that. And this, you really can. Like it gives you an area where you can go, and it shows you where the map is, and that's that, you're set to that. And you know, you could fast travel, which is kind of cool, but like going back to the stats, everything is automatic. And as you level up your everything, all your stats, your strength, your
nice, you know,
defense, attack, everything is all, it all goes up by a certain percentage every level. And the weapons you can craft, but it's very minimal. It's like there's no real mental work to make anything special. It tells you what it can do. It does it automatically. You just accept. You're like, do you want to craft this? Yeah, I do it. Done. And then he makes it for you, and then you put it on. Done. The abilities you get, maybe like 15 total abilities, and you can like swap them out. I think you get like 9 that you could choose from. And so you can have 9 active abilities working for you, and you kind of use triangle to swap between the 3 different ones. So it's I'm not going to go into too much detail on the gameplay, but the main attraction of this game is the story and the cinematic universe that you're in. And so every chapter has a scene, and it's pretty decent like length of a scene that expands the story. And they really did go all out with the voice work, with the, you know, the little cutscenes you get in it, and then the music is phenomenal. I know when the last time we saw each other, Daniel, I had mentioned that the music was like overrated.
Yeah, that wasn't that good. Yeah,
it was very early on in the game, and I did say that to you too. I'm like, this is early, so we'll see. And yeah, my opinion has changed. The music does improve. It doesn't get stale. I thought it was going to be like the same 3 songs the whole game. No, it expands. There's other music, and the cinematic music when the cutscenes go on are phenomenal. And just the music that you get to listen in town, you could change it. It's like a jukebox, so you could change the songs if you don't like what you're listening to. And the character development's good. The story just keeps expanding, and I was surprised how much dialogue there is, like in terms of actually spoken. You know, a lot of the Final Fantasy games back in the day, you would just be reading and just reading and reading. And while there is some reading in this game, it's like 10%, majority of it's actually spoken. So that was pretty cool. I would probably give this so far an 8 out of 10. I'm enjoying it, but again, it's not like an RPG that I was expecting. It's very linear in terms of like the story. You're going to just keep going through the main quest. You got some, you know, side quests, but it's not like, it's nothing crazy to like some of the other games that I played, like Skyrim or some of the Lord of the Rings, Shadow of War, Shadow of Mordor.
Right.
Those side quests are a little bit more involved. These are more, you know, more simple. But again, the main story, that's where the attraction is. And I think you're going to enjoy it, Daniel. It's actually cheap, too, now. It's not too expensive. I think if you get it on sale for like $30 to $40, it's worth it.
Yeah, you kind of sold me on it. I was kind of intimidated by the size of it, because I am interested. It's got like that Game of Thrones, like medieval theme, and it looks really interesting. But I'm just like, I just can't deal with all that looting. So I kind of convinced myself I wasn't going to deal with it. But yeah, I might have to pick it up then.
Yeah, I would say with regards to the loot, there is loot to pick up when you like exploring the world and stuff. There's like some chests here and there. You get some loot from when you complete quests and when you kill certain bosses. But the majority of it, like 90% of it, you're not even thinking about it. You're like, oh, I got some scraps of metal or whatever the fuck. And it's not going to actually take up, like, you're not going to think about it until you actually go to the blacksmith and you actually go to, you know, craft something. And there's only like 5 options to craft. And then maybe you'll get like a 6th option after you beat a certain boss. And then you're like, oh, I have the supplies. Craft. Done. It's very, very simple. And for me, that I kind of like, I don't hold it as a negative point, but I'm so used to these Diablo games. I'm so used to these like really grindy games that this was like, while refreshing to kind of chill, also like a bit of a letdown in terms of what I was expecting. I was expecting a little bit more involvement in the crafting and all that. But, you know, I'll accept it. The story is really worth it. I really dig the, like, the nuances and, like, the parallels where there's, you know, politics involved and there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. So definitely worth watching, playing, I mean, as well as watching when the cutscenes kick off. But we're going to switch gears here and introduce this article for the week. All right. So instead of a traditional article, we got a YouTube video, although there are some articles in that YouTube video that you can look up. I'm just going to, you know, link for you guys the video itself. It's from The Quartering. He's a political channel, talks about a lot of current events, political and, you know, celebrities in Hollywood, and kind of a gossip channel. It's like a one man TMZ, if you want to say, and relate it to something. But I've been following this guy for years now. I don't always agree with his point of view, but on this case, I very much do. This title of the video is IRS Bombshell. They have full access to all bank accounts using AI and are targeting regular Americans. So it kind of talks about how the IRS is supposedly going to be accepting the use of AI to monitor people's accounts, their bank accounts, their transactions, and kind of, you know, targeting regular everyday, you know, Americans. And they're going at them hard to the point where they might even imprison people for the minor infractions that occur, you know, sometimes by accident, sometimes on purpose, but even minor ones. It also goes into detail about this debt deal that cut $21 billion of IRS funding from $80 billion. And there's 87,000 new IRS agents that are going to stay. So I don't know about you guys, but 87,000 IRS agents seems like a lot. Seems like a lot for a department that really, it should be more about accounting than anything. So I'm not really sure why they need to arm all these agents, but very alarming, very alarming. It does go into detail in the video, and then it also shows a video from, looks like, a criminal investigations like program. Like it's like a show, a documentary type thing that people do. This guy does, and it's on throughout the video kind of describes a video that is showing an IRS agent by the name of what's it say here?
Something Alex Shamar, something like that.
Alex Mina.
There you go. Yeah.
And he kind of is the one that spills the bean and confirms that, yeah, it is probably likely that the IRS is going to use AI to monitor people's accounts. And he even mentions in this video, he's like, is this, and he talks to the guy, he's like, is this constitutionally like legal? He's like, probably not. And he goes into more detail. He's like, the thing is, we're under the president's authority, and we're like directly the federal government. So the states have no real say or any authority into what the IRS is doing. So it is like a short video. It's like 13 minutes. I do recommend people give it a watch, and, you know, give according a follow if you can. He does have some interesting videos. But I'm opening it up to you guys. What do you guys think about it?
Yeah, to me, I totally believe it. I mean, they're listening into your phone call conversations. So what would stop them from checking out your bank accounts, your 401ks? He brought up a personal circumstance where he won some money at a casino and he forgot to report it. And the IRS came after him, and then they fined them, and then they gave him a penalty. So stuff like that's been happening forever. Yeah, it's been happening forever. It's just that now it's going to become even more so, that it's going to become easier for them to use AI and other means like that to be more aggressive. I mean, not only you kind of breezed over it, but not only to just hire all these new agents, but they made it a big point of that they're going to arm all these agents. So I don't remember the last time IRS sent me a letter like, hey, this looks kind of suspicious, can you send us more details? Now they're going to send armed people to your door. It all kind of sounds a little kind of like old school Chicago mob, you know, like racketeering, kind of squeezing people. It doesn't sound cool.
I remember in college when I was taking criminal justice, one of the professors said, what's the strongest federal agency you think there is? And people would, you know, CIA, FBI, ATF, like all the alphabet agencies, and no one said the IRS. He goes, the IRS is the strongest federal agency. They could arrest people. They could take your stuff on suspicion alone. If they think it's you're making money illegally or something like that, it goes. And this is like in the late 90s, early 2000s. I remember hearing him saying that. Then it goes into like the video reinforces what a lot of people think, but now they're using technology. And the other thing is the guy who did the recording is by the group of James O'Keefe. He's already. He's busted a lot of people, agencies or companies with the recordings like this, and he's been on Tim Pool. He recently got arrested a couple years back by the FBI because he reported on some stuff. I think he's still working on that, and then he started a new company, the OMG. It's called O'Keefe Media. Something like that, Citizen something Guard or something. I forgot the name of it. But yeah, he's notorious for doing this stuff. And it's always guys going out on dates at bars because they meet. And then he asked them, what's like, what do you guys do? And he goes, like, we get these reporters to, they kind of get a list of people. I don't say a list, but they find out who works there. And then they just kind of like, try to not trap them, but try to get to meet up with them. And then this stuff happens. But going back to the AI stuff and like all that, and then the money that they were able to get, like, it's crazy. And like, it's all about digital currency, I think, going down the road, and cash. People today with cash, especially the younger people, they get freaked out. Like, you pay with a 20 at a store, they count really slow, and the change, like, they're, not that they don't know what to do, it's just like they're intimidated by it. They're just looking at you like, why aren't you using your debit or credit card, you know?
No, for sure. I think he brought, I'm sorry, Noah. I thought he brought up a good point as far as with COVID, it made it a lot more of a cashless society.
Yes.
More so that, like you said, Andy, I used to carry around, you know, not a lot of money, but I used to carry like 30, 40 bucks in my pocket.
A lot of money.
Because you never know when you need it back in the day. But now I carry even less. I carry like 10 bucks, 15 bucks, because everything is debit card or whatever kind of card. And I hardly ever pay anything with cash. It just happened the other day that I was in the mall and one of those like mid aisle vendors, and I paid cash because I'm like, I feel kind of weird giving this guy my card information to buy a little thing of elotes or whatever they're selling. And so for those, I did pay cash, but yeah, it's so weird to pay cash nowadays.
And then even some of the self checkout aisles now, like it's really popular in just a lot of grocery stores. Some of them say card only, and I think they have like certain machines that are cash. Like, it's just weird to me. Like, why don't they just make them all cash and debit? But I don't know why they do that. I think they do it just to make it inconvenient for people who use cash. That's my theory on that. But yeah, definitely the younger people with the Zelle. You see how Zelle all of a sudden became like real popular? And all the banks have a piece of it. And they use it in many different bank apps and like Venmo and like PayPal and Cash App and all this shit. Like it kind of like fell off to the side. Everything's fucking Zelle.
Yeah, in the video, it also talks about how the IRS is going to look into like Venmo and all that stuff now too. And I guess certain transactions that are over a certain dollar amount are going to be like more scrutinized and like looked at closer. So, yeah, it is kind of alarming, dude. And, you know, going back to the cashless part you guys were talking about, like Portillo's now is cashless. They don't do cash when you do the drive through. And it's kind of worrisome, not for Portillo's, but like if we move into a cashless society. And let's say, God forbid, there's like some weird event where the grid goes down and it doesn't come back up for a good while and we're all without power nationwide. Imagine that. How are we going to know our balance? How are we going to access it? You know, what are we going to do?
Yeah, so I mean, this week, AT&T was down for like a day or 2 days.
Yeah, I heard about that.
What did all those people do if they're got their bank information on their cell phone?
Exactly, man. It's scary to think. And the thing is, too, the government, I think, even said something about that. There's like hints that they give you, man. Like, you know, I don't want to go into the conspiracy stuff, but there is something going on, obviously, right? Like, this isn't all happening just coincidence. Like, it's something's happening. They're planning something. We're not in on it, obviously. We're just kind of reacting to whatever the hell happens day by day. But it seems like they're giving you a hint like, yo, what if the power goes out? Be prepared kind of thing. And it's like they keep talking about solar flares. And
isn't that funny how solar flares? I remember watching Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory show. And one of the episodes was about solar flares. And like this guy was on there. People like they didn't really take him too seriously. And then like the last 3 years when all this stuff happens, they're saying, or we think it's solar flares, but they kind of try to downplay it because there's not really much they can do about it. And to me, I'm like, man, Ventura was right again. he was talking to some dude and like, yeah, I talked to government officials and they're like, there's no money for this shit. It's not that important. So don't worry about it.
I just got emailed this week, actually, from my city where I live in. They sent me an invite for a disaster preparedness meeting. And on there, it has like six events. And I don't recall if solar flare was on there, but it did have like tornado, earthquake, you know, loss of power, loss of water. And they had like a terrorist activity. So they had like a bunch of different like preparedness. So like we'll train you how to be prepared for these events.
That's a way to round up preppers and shit. Like at Red Dawn when somebody invaded, they round up people who are like could be problematic, and there's a lot of them was like people who are like preppers and self-sufficient people. They like round them up and shit and throw them in camps and stuff.
Yeah, so if you don't see me, if you don't see me in the next recording, you know what happened. But I've never seen Red Dawn.
All you need is your Bible, granola bars, and your gun. They're gonna like this guy's a problem right here.
Yeah, and no, it is it's kind of worrisome, man. But I guess, yeah, if you do have, like, you know, contingency plans you have already prepared, then you should be okay. But there's a lot of people that don't. They just live day to day, kind of blind to the stuff that's going on around them. And it is a worrying thing, man, because it's not just solar flares that can cause power outages. If you, like, going back to the terrorist attack thing that you said, there could be EMPs that are, you know, thrown out and, you know, cause damage for a long time, for, you know, who knows, like, it could be years. And imagine if the power was out in the United States for years, like, that would cripple our society, dude. So definitely don't want to go cashless anytime soon, man. Cash is king, as the saying goes, but we'll see what happens.
Well, they indoctrinated kids not to use cash or checks, because everything is through the app or a debit card. And then with the phones, with Apple Pay and all this other crap, it's more prevalent in, I don't know, man. Today's kids, like, when you, like I said, when you pay with cash, they get freaked out.
Man, how's it gonna be in the future? You know, like my parents, they're grandpas now, and they give a few bucks to the grandkids. Like, yeah, here's $5. Get yourself something from the store. Here's a couple bucks. Go buy some candy and stuff. How's it going to be in the future for my grandkids? Am I going to have to sell them? Like, hey, here's a few bucks so you can go buy yourself something?
Shit, dude. It's going to be like, just real quick, you know, they're really pushing the Federal Reserve digital currency, the coin or whatever. And they think, a lot of people think, when the economy hits the fan and people's dollars, like, hyperinflation, they're going to really push for people to trade in whatever money they got to get that Fed coin through the Federal Reserve. And that's, I think, where they're going to go. And then from there, they can really control everything, because you got to have a wallet and all this other goofy shit, and a digital wallet, and then they can really control your money, you know?
Yeah, man, just wait until the day where your Google glasses and your Neuralink start telepathically sending money to your grandkids, man.
Well, with that being said, man, let us know what you guys think. If you what you feel about the AI, that's like the hot topic the last couple months. And now that the government's the government's probably been using it for a while, but let us know what you guys think at ffnquestions@gmail.com. And then for all you guys, thank you for listening, but we got to wrap this up. Remember, you can follow Freeform Network on Twitter or X at Freeform Network. Send your questions, suggestions to ffnquestions@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our webpage, where we have a lot of our older shows at freeformnetwork.podbean.com. There are links to all the platforms that we're on. However you listen to us, click, subscribe, comment. That helps us out immensely. And we're on multiple platforms on our webpage. It's all on there, links. For Freeform Radio, we got Danny.
Yes, sir. Getting kind of hungry, man. I don't know what I'm going to eat. I bought some spicy chicken nuggets from Jasper's. I think I'm going to give those a whirl and see how they come out.
And then we got Noel.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Stay safe out there. Be prepared.
It's all good. Andy, I want to thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out our page, check out our YouTube, and send questions and suggestions. And we'll check you out next time.
That was cool, Dad.